7th of April, 1984. Okay, and I'm Pat Slora and Paul Fitzgerald. And is it okay if we release this tape for general AI use, Paul?
Sure, okay. Of course.
You want to go ahead then?
What groups have you got there?
Well, now I don't have any groups. These are just some questions I might ask you.
I see.
But why don't we just go ahead and start with what you've got?
I see. I've tried to run these down in chronological order as I remember them, and some of the groups and dates they started and were founded and by whom are, I don't remember, but I'll give them to the best of my ability and remembrance. The Newport Ritchie Group, now meeting at Father Felix Hall, 705 Washington Street, Newport Ritchie, started approximately 1968 in an art studio on Missouri Avenue in Newport Ritchie. Then moved to a glass store on South Boulevard in Newport Ritchie.
Okay.
Exactly when moved to Father Felix Hall, where they now meet, was somewhere around 1972. The founders, I have no recollection of, I can't find anybody who does remember the founders of the Father Felix Group, I mean the Newport Ritchie Group.
Okay.
Now that, as far, goes as far as I can with the Newport Ritchie Group. The Tarpon Springs Group, which now meets in the Old Saints Episcopal Church, 1600 Keystone Road, on SR 582, started in 1968 at St. Ignatius Church in Tarpon Springs.
Okay, does this name mean anything to you? I have her down as one of the secretaries of that early Tarpon Springs group, and she no longer attends meetings.
No, I don't recall her. I didn't attend Tarpon Springs too often.
Okay.
But I don't have any founders for the Tarpon Springs group.
Okay.
Now that brings us to the Houghton Holler group, which now meets at the Westminster Presbyterian Church, 3401 U.S. 19 in Newport Ritchie. The founders, to the best of my recollection, were Frank Kelly and Mrs. Kelly, Alan Leroy Biggers, and a party named Tom Higgins was mentioned to me. Did I mention the year?
No, I don't think so.
This group started also in 1968, as I remember. Mm-hmm. And the next group would be the Third and Eleventh Step Group, which meets in the King of Kings Lutheran Church, 2020 U.S. 19 North in Port Ritchie. This group started in 1973 by Al Hay, Jack Beckley, and George Gauss, and maybe one or two others who I just don't recall. Mm-hmm. And then the next group is the Odessa Group, who meet in a community building in Odessa, Florida. This started in 1974 or 75. The founders were a man named Julian. He's a regular attendant at the Newport Ritchie group on Friday nights. He's a big tall native, and I don't know his last name. And a girl who used the name of Wheezy as probably for anonymity purposes.
Yeah, I've heard of Wheezy. Yeah.
And that's about all I could tell you about that group. That started around 1974 or 75. Then the fourth group I have here, Keep It Simple Group for Women, also meets in the Westminster Presbyterian Church, 3401 U.S. 19 South, Newport Beach. Started in 1975 by Bonnie Clifford, Evelyn Clifford, and Ronnie O'Loughlin. Now I should bring in the Hudson Group. The Hudson Group meets at the Chamber of Commerce Building in Hudson, Florida, and started in 1976 by Al Haig, Jack Beckley, and myself, Paul Fitzgerald, and still meets there. The New Life Group, which meets at St. Vincent de Paul Church in Holiday, Florida, started in 1977 or 1978 by Ronnie and Harry O'Loughlin. The Gratitude Group, which now meets at Holiday Inn on U.S. 19 South, Newport Richey, started in 1980 by Jack Beckley, Merle Vickery, V-I-K-R-I-E, and Orville Hardy at Beacon Woods. And the next group would be the Unity Fireside Group, which meets in Unity Church at 55 Pine Hill Road, Port Richey. Started in 1980 by Mary Guam, Jack Beckley, and Al Hay. The next group was the H-O-H-period-O-period-W-period group. That's the Hudson Senior Citizen Center, Hudson, Florida. Started in 1980 by Peter Carsu. That's spelled C-A-R-S-U. Allegra Barton, A-L-L-E-G-R-A, Barton, and Jim Hanley. And the next group was the A.A. Way Group, King of Glory Lutheran Church, Gulf Harbors, in Newport Richey. Started in 1982 by Mary Guam and Betty and Bob Logan. Perhaps Mary knows somebody else in that group. Is she still there?
Marion White and Bob White. Don White were also founders of that group.
Also, two of the original starters of that group were Marion and Don White. And then I think the next group that I have here is this Central Orbis group, which was started in 1983. The founders, there were several of them, and I just don't know what names to give you. I'm sure Mary is in on that, a fellow named McCullough.
Yeah, Joe.
Joe McCullough.
And Woody.
And Winnie.
Woody.
Woody, yes. Uh-huh. He was in on it. And who else, I don't recall. But I was here at the meeting when it started. Now, several of these new groups listed on this here where and when AA meetings in published in June 1983. I've checked off that I've made no record of them, but I understand, and we discussed this morning with Mary, that they all started between October 1980 or 1981. So I wouldn't have any record of these. You can see them. The Ozona group record, you probably have record of all the Ozona groups, haven't
right.
you?
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's not too many of them there that you have to look up.
Yeah, right.
Perhaps Mary, when she gets feeling better, can give you better dates on these new groups that started around Newport Richey.
Okay, now the first activity up in Newport Richey was what year? Do you remember?
What was that?
The beginning activity of AA in Newport Richey was, I mean, or in Pasco County was when? Do you remember what
I would have to say between 67 and 68. 1967 and 1968.
Okay, there was a Tarpon Springs group that was combined with Newport Richey, and then they split up, but I think that was in the late 40s or early 50s. I'm not sure. That's why I had one of the records. I didn't bring mine because I thought there would be files up here about that. It was the old World Service Directory that I had.
Well, that may very well be so, because Tarpon Springs and the Newport Richey group were the original groups, as I recollect it.
Do you remember
that was prior to the time that I came to Newport Richey.
When did you come to Newport Richey?
I came down in around 1970.
Okay.
And I attended my first meeting in the Newport Richey group over in the art studio on Missouri Avenue.
Oh.
A little studio wall over there. The place is still there, but then I understand that they moved to some glass store, and then eventually to Father Felix, and I think they've been in Father Felix Hall ever since.
Do you know of anybody that came to AA that was in AA prior to 1970 in Pasco County?
I would have to say Frank Kelly would be the one of the oldest members that I know, and possibly Al Hay, being now up in Brooklyn.
Okay. Do you know Frank Kelly's phone number or how I could get in touch with him?
I think you might find it in the phone book or contact somebody in Houghton Hollow group, because they must have something on him, because I'm sure that he was one of the founders.
Okay.
I remember distinctly calling. I called him up, as a matter of fact, when I first came down here from New York.
Uh-huh.
So I wanted to go to an AA meeting, and so I got them. So I called AA.
Uh-huh.
I don't know who I got, but I, Alcoholics Anonymous, but I'm pretty sure it was Mrs. Kelly.
Yeah.
And then they directed me to the Westminster Presbyterian Church.
Okay, you had talked before on the other tape about Dr. Silkworth and his nurse, Tanny. Could you tell us a little bit more about them, particularly about her? I wasn't aware that she was an alcoholic.
What was the name that you get used?
Teddy, wasn't that?
Oh, Teddy Rohn, yes. Uh-huh. Teddy Rohn was the Miss Rheingold of 1919. There's a brewery up in New York that used to run a beauty contest every year, and in 1919 she won the beauty contest. She was a very lovely person and a very beautiful lady. And she had a rapport with Dr. Silkworth, which was really outstanding. And she had a terrific way with alcoholics. She worked in a hospital in New York. First she worked in the town's hospital with Dr. Silkworth, and then they moved to, later on, to Knickerbocker Hospital. Mm-hmm. And she worked there for several years. The years that she left out changed, I don't recall. And then she went over and she worked with the a hospital in Paterson, New Jersey, that's still in operation. That was founded by a Catholic priest. And she worked over there for several years, and then from there she went on to some place in Houston. And I understand she worked in a hospital down in Houston up until the time she passed on, which is somewhere around 7 or 8 years ago. But she was a very dynamic and very personable lady, and had a wonderful way with alcoholics. I can remember her saying, coming around about 9 o'clock, coming into Duffy's Tavern up in the Knickerbocker Hospital, and she'd come around and say, "Come on, boys, say your prayers and get ready for bed. So we'd all have to leave Duffy's Tavern and go into bed. She had a wonderful way with men. I don't know how she did it and how she ever developed the patience. It could only happen through the medium of the 12 suggested steps, that she would have this patience and compassion that she showed towards the alcoholic. I never heard a bad word spoken about this lady, and everything I heard is always the best."
How long was she in AA, and what do you know when she joined it? Or?
I would have to go back to Bill Wilson's days on that one. Has to be somewhere around the early 1940s. And because most alcoholics at that particular time were either put in the municipal hospital like Kings County in Brooklyn or the Bellevue in New York. And she worked over at Towns Hospital up near Central Park with Dr. Silkworth. And when she joined him, I don't know, but then she left the Towns and went to Knickerbocker, and I think that's when I remember Teddy Best from Knickerbocker with Dr. Silkworth, who to me was a tremendous man.
He told you something that changed your life, didn't he?
He told me that I admitted that I was alcoholic, and he said that all your actions indicate that you are alcoholic. Nevertheless, you refuse to accept it. And this hit me like a ton of bricks. And he was very strong about the honesty part of the program, honesty within myself. And he says, "This brings out the fact that you accept that first drink, that you're an alcoholic." And he said that the proof of the pudding, as far as an alcoholic, is that you will not pick up the first drink regardless of anything, or anybody, or any circumstance that develops throughout your business life or any other walk of your life. And you keep your alcoholic separate and apart from anything else that develops throughout the day. And you do your best to stay sober one day at a time, a one-day plan, which you know we have in the program so well. And this was very difficult for me because I was the type of a man who was always projecting and anticipating things, and I think which seems to be the experience with most alcoholics, and I was no exception. However, as with a lot of meetings, closed meetings especially, I developed a little bit of calmness and serenity, and I started to be able to digest what he meant when he said to separate my problems and also to put into play the one-day plan, which I've been using ever since, and I find it invaluable, both of them. But the separation of your problems, to me, is one of the most important features of this here fellowship, because I think that the average alcoholic ties in liquor with anything that crops up that may hurt them in business or family-wise or anything at all. And two, it seems to be the experience that alcoholics, when we have a cause, something good happens, they get a raise in pay or promotion in their job or something good happens in their family, they have to go out and celebrate. So when he told me all of this about separating my problems, I understood, but it took me a long time to get around to digest it and put it into play. But today I do it. Anything crops up, there's nothing important in this world for me to pick up that first drink because I know what the consequences will be. And he was very strong on this. He was very strong on the one-day plan. But he, as well as Teddy, were very compassionate people. He spoke to me, I think, for an hour and three quarters. And that's a lot of time for a psychiatrist to put in on one person. But he had the most kindly eyes of any man I've ever met in all my life. There were no words of mine that could possibly express how deeply this man took an interest in you when he was talking to you. And likewise, Teddy, I would go back and visit Knickerbocker on several occasions, and I always had a friendly chat with her, and she was a very fine person to talk to, and it seemed to me she always remembered. When you went in the room, she would know you right away. While she might not remember every name, she knew you, and she greeted you very nicely, and she made you feel right at home, and you always did feel at home. And the same I could say for Dr. Silkwood.
Yeah. He was not a large man, was he?
No, I'd rather say he was kind of short. Mm-hmm. About my size, 5'6", maybe 5'5".
You had met Bill, too, hadn't you, Bill?
Oh, yes, at the dinners. Every year they would run a dinner in New York, mm-hmm. and they still do. Right. At that time, I think they ran the dinners, I was around 1947 and 48. They ran the dinners in the Commodore Hotel, which is right next to the Grand Central Station, and we could go to the dinners over there at that time for $5. There'd be dinner and Bill Wilson would be the featured speaker. Of course, we had the introductory speakers and so on, but he would speak for about anywhere up to 2 hours. He was a very wonderful talker, you know, great personality, and a very, very deep sense of humility as far as I was concerned. And the more I heard him, the more I appreciated him. The last time I heard him was on that movie on the 12 Traditions. Have you heard that? Did you, would you ever forget the way he wound that up?
Yeah, with the camera fading out.
Yeah, beautiful.
It's very moving.
And I think at that time he was coming close to the end.
Yeah, he was showing his age and the illness.
But he gave a very clear and concise interpretation of the traditions, and when he brought out the fact that you should always keep principles before personalities, this hit me like a ton of bricks. And I've tried to practice that ever since.
Yeah. He really had a rough time with shaping the future of AA and the service structure. It seemed like people fought him so much because of the foresight that he had that they didn't have.
Well, I think that Bill and Bob Smith, of course, was suited as a team, because Wilson, being a sales broker, investment broker, was a natural salesman. And Bob Smith, when he settled down, was the stabilizer between the two of them. That's where this keep it simple came from. And I think that there were a lot of other men, and many of them I knew. I was fortunate enough to be able to meet these people. One was Jonas Anderson, and Jack Leonard, both of them deceased now. They were from the Brooklyn group. They met in Hotel St. George, and I think they were very instrumental in expanding the program throughout the East, Northeast. And,
I had never heard their names before. That's interesting.
Well, they very rarely ever were spoken about, and they kept very much in the background, but they were very important factor in spreading the word. There's no question about that. And I never forget another man that was a Supreme Court judge in the state of New York. I think it was in 1948 he ran for office, and he held an open meeting in the Hotel St. George the Friday after the Tuesday election. And he he took the whole hour to talk, and he wound up by saying, if I wasn't elected Tuesday, I would need AA. And it was because of AA that I was elected. Of course, my name is Joe Conway, and I'm just another alcoholic. Very dramatic, I thought. And then at that meeting, those meetings in the Brooklyn group, they used to have anywhere from 200 to 300 people on a Friday night. And he was a very active man in AA, and he did a lot of work. And I could always remember him when I hear people complaining about the anonymity part of the program. He'd get on the platform and say, my name is Joe Conway and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm a state Supreme Court justice. If there are any members of the press or news media here tonight, please respect my anonymity. But he didn't hesitate to use his name. Now, I'm not advocating that we change the system, but I'm just telling you how much this man thought of this here fellowship.
Yeah.
That he was. And as I recall, he died here within the last 2 or 3 years. He served 3 terms as Supreme Court Justice in New York State, elected twice more.
What about your sponsor? He knew Bill, didn't he?
Yes, Jack Lennon.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a man who came from Ireland when he was a boy about 16, and he was a very shrewd and a very personable young man, and he went into business for himself. I think it was in the electrician business, electric business of some kind, electrical supply business. And he did very well to the point where he got himself more money than he ever anticipated. And through the use and abuse of alcohol, he drank himself out of the business and went up New York State to Hudson, New York. And he worked as a gandy dancer, if you know what that is.
No.
They're the fellows that go along the railroad track and pick up papers and all the refuse on the railroad track. And he finally settled down in Hudson, New York, and he opened a restaurant up there, and finally decided to come back to Brooklyn. And he came back to Brooklyn, sold the restaurant in Hudson, came back to Brooklyn, and he opened up a fuel oil distribution business, and he also made another fortune. The generosity and humility that this man had is beyond description as far as I'm concerned. And he was also very instrumental in spreading the word throughout the East as far as Alcoholics Anonymous was concerned. And he went to all the conventions. He was at the 1956 convention in St. Louis when Eisenhower sent a telegram to the convention, and Jonas Anderson and Jack Lennon were instrumental in straightening Bill Wilson out on a monetary item, which I don't think it should be put in the records. And he was also very friendly with Wilson. And he thought the world of Wilson, but he said he was a very aggressive man in his younger days. There was a time, I think, and I could be corrected on this, that the movie people came to Wilson and offered him so much money to write his alcoholic history, and they would make a picture of it. He offered him a large sum of money. How much I wouldn't want to say at this time, but they were instrumental in talking him out of having this picture made. Mm. I think this is pretty well known.
Yeah, I've heard references to it before. In fact, I thought that they did make it, and he didn't approve it. He went out there and saw it and didn't like what it was, that it was very bad, and he finally refused to approve it, but I thought they had made it.
Yeah. At the aging of some of his stronger members, as I understand it, including, I guess, Bob Smith, because if you remember when he went to Rockefeller for help, well, you got a big surprise when it comes to the money angle.
Right, yeah.
I think they got about $5,000, a donation of about $5,000, $2,500 of which went to Bob Smith and $2,500 to Bill Wilson. But they did have a big, large dinner which got it off the ground, and the steering committee was formed at that time, of which I think there were around 10 or 12 members, and seven of them were non-alcoholic. Today, I believe that most of the members on the steering committee are alcoholics.
Right, yeah. It took Bill a long time to get that, though. It was in 1966, wasn't it, that he was able to get a majority of alcoholics on the board?
That may be so. I'm not too familiar with that.
So what year was it that you attended your first meeting, and what was your first, when do you date your sobriety?
The first meeting I attended was the old Flatbush group in Brooklyn on Flatbush Avenue in 1946. And I went to this meeting and I was very much impressed with the warmth and the friendship and the greetings that I got. But at this point, I don't think I was ready for it. I'm quite sure. And however, I kept coming back. Of course, as one person told me, a very good friend of mine back in Brooklyn, the lady that I know up there, she told me you were being entertained. I said, that's probably true. I love the stories and so on, and I didn't care too much for the closed meeting. But in my last hospitalization, I came out of the hospital on Flag Day in 1950. That's June 14th. And there's no particular significance, of course, but I always celebrate my anniversary on June 14th by trying to get the first step at some group. And this I usually do. This year I'm going to celebrate my 34th anniversary on June 14th. But it'll be on a fourth step. It just so happens that the group is having a fourth step that particular night, so I'll have to take the fourth step, which to me is one of the tremendous step where I really started to find myself, find out what was wrong with me, what caused me to drink. And then, of course, I had to go on the fifth, sixth, and seventh step to meet the challenge and ask for the help. But that was when I first accepted the fact that I was an alcoholic. And I came out of the hospital in June
14, 1950. Did Dr. Silk work with you in that hospital then?
No, that was Dr. Wiseman in Kings County Hospital. Mm-hmm. He told me the same thing as Dr. Silk would, though. Told me a couple other things that I don't think it'd be a good idea to put on me. However, I passed the test in Kings County. I didn't think that Paul Fitzgerald or any Fitzgeralds would ever wind up in a municipal hospital. This was a tremendous shock to my pride and ego. See, I came from a good family. Very good family. My father was a very good provider, best of schools. And we'd go away for the summer and all that business, you know, and I wasn't ready for the world. But these men got me ready.
Yeah. Don't you think many of the early members were like that, though?
Definitely.
They
so.
Weren't people that came off the street. They came from very good families.
Oh, yes, yes. There's no question about it. There were a couple of ladies. I remember too, well, you've heard of Marty Mann, the work he did with the National Council of Alcoholism. She was a novice.
Is she still alive?
No, she passed away about 2 years ago. But there were two ladies that I remember back in the late 40s. One was Frances Foley. She came off the street. And then there was a girl there, they called her the Florence Nightingale. She was she used to go anywhere and anywhere, 12 step anybody. Both of them did. And I've heard them both speak, and they were wonderful, the work that they did, in conjunction with all the other members around New York City at that time. was tremendous and really outstanding. And I believe they belonged to the South Bronx group, both of them. And Frances Foley, you very rarely ever hear her name being brought up, but the work that she did was outstanding. And this other girl was one of her, I call her constituents. But the fellowship, as far as I'm concerned, is going with leaps and bounds. And I think it's going to be a tremendous influence on the country as a whole and many other directions. It is, as a matter of fact, we know of all the other outfits that have sprung from it, Gamblers Anonymous and Eating Anonymous and so on.
Right. You know, today it's hard. I don't really see a lot of difference between the open and the closed meetings. There doesn't seem to be a lot of difference in the material that's discussed and the people that are there. And you spoke of a difference in the open and closed meetings, that you learned more in the closed meetings. Could you talk a little bit about that, how they were different?
Yes. Usually when they called speakers meetings here in Florida, and up in New York City in that area, and all throughout the East as far as that is concerned, they were told, as a matter of fact, they were put right on their bulletins, open and closed meetings in different nights. Like, for instance, our group met on a Thursday night, and that was a closed meeting, and that was for alcoholics only. And the open meeting was on a Sunday night, and that was for anybody to attend. Now, at the open meeting, they usually had three speakers and a leader. The leader would introduce the speakers, and they would give a resume of their background while they were drinking and how they progressed since they came into AA. And that would be the sum and substance of an open meeting. And then, of course, the socializing that went on after the meeting, when they would have coffee and cake, and sometimes if it was an anniversary, they'd have ice cream and coffee and cake. And usually a big cake for the celebrants. At the closed meetings, they would have one person who would discuss one of the steps. And we did this religiously every week. And that's where the 90 days and 90 meetings come in. So as they could make the complete circuit of the 12 suggested steps, they tried to start out with the first step and then they'd run consecutively until they complete again, and you have a tradition meeting, and then they'd start over again with the 12 suggested steps, with the first one running consecutively thereon. And this, to me, was invaluable as far as I'm concerned. This is where I got to know about myself, because I was so naive and gullible, and I just didn't, I was confused, a very confused individual till I got into the steps. I had several good jobs, and strange to say, I could always make money. I was with one of the major petroleum companies for over 19 years. Then they sent me to Chicago office as assistant purchasing agent, and I dragged myself out of that. And then I went to work for a company in New York, the American Machine and Foundry Company. And then I worked with them until I retired after 20 years. And I retired early in 1962 due to a health condition and a recommendation of my doctor. And that was in 1967. They kept me on for another year as on a two-day-a-week basis till they replaced me. And so I'm apparently enjoying very good health ever since, because I'm going around to meetings in New York, Brooklyn, and Florida, and other places. And I've never lost my enthusiasm for the program. This is something I cherish very much. And I also cherish the memory and the knowledge that I obtained from these old-timers, like Jack Lennon, Dr. Silkwaite, Bill Wilson, and all these other men, Joe McGrath, the judge, and Jonas Anderson. Could I put in a little story about Jonas
sure.
Anderson?
Yeah.
I was at the racetrack in Brooklyn, at the Aqueduct Racetrack, before the new track was built. This was in the 1950s. And I was standing out on the lawn in the clubhouse, and a man came down to me, tapped me on the shoulder. I was in my shirt sleeves like I am now. And he said, "The man upstairs in the clubhouse in the dining room wants to see you." And I went up to the dining room, and at that time you weren't permitted to go in the dining room without a coat. So the head waiter came over to me and said, "I'm sorry, we can't let you in." I said, "I didn't ask to come in. There's a gentleman asking for me." And with that, Jonas comes down and he says, "Can't you get a coat for this man to let him come up and have dinner with me?" And here this man took his time out, saw me out on the lawn, to pick me out to have dinner with him. He's the chairman of the board. He was the chairman of the board of Kuhn Loeb, one of the largest investment outfits on Wall Street at that time. Picked, singled me out to come up and have dinner with him. That's how much he cherished the memory of AA and the fellowship.
He knew you from AA.
Yes. I would go to the meetings and I'd ask him. Well, whenever I had a problem, I would either go to him or Jack Lennon, and I'd always get the answer. I'd never forget one time I said to him, "How about the repetition in AA, on these, especially at the open meetings, when you hear these stories and you hear them more than once or twice?" And he says, "Well, that's the time you go to sleep." And that always stuck with me, and I always tell that to anybody that gets complaining about repetition.
Yeah.
But those are the type of men that I was fortunate enough to be able to meet. And there were many, many others too. But those two I particularly had a very friendly feeling for.
So when did you work with your sponsor? Was he assigned to you, or did you ask him, or what?
For some unknown reason, he took a particular interest in me. And we started to go around together, and he'd be asking me questions, and I'd be answering him to the best of my ability, and he'd say, "That's right," or "That's wrong." And who are you to think you can just do this, that, and the other, and so on? So he straightened me out. He straightened my thinking out in many, many ways. And I would like to think that I've obtained a little bit of his humility along the way. He was a really wonderful man. Generosity is beyond words. He was the type of a man that people would borrow money from, and sometimes he would get it back, sometimes he wouldn't. And he was always making donations to charitable affairs. And I know in our particular church, he always paid for all the poor people of the parish when the children would have their first communion and their confirmation and so on and so forth. And this was always done on an anonymous basis. And Jonas Anderson's was the same way. He had a long list of families, poor families, that he would contribute and help out. And he had people that would never disclose their names and would contact these poor people and help them out. But those are two of the most outstanding men that I ever did meet. And they, unfortunately, they passed on.
You know, today there's so much controversy about AA, about the drug addicts coming into AA, and people are very worried about it. There's a lot of fear involved in it. Was there any problem like that in the beginning that people were concerned about?
Well, as I recall, that question come up at one time in the early 50s or the middle 50s, and I think it was before up to Wilson, Bill Wilson, and he said, well, we appreciate their problem, and it's my feeling that AA will always be for the alcoholic. However, if we can help them, we should. If they come to the meetings and they can be helped at the meetings, we should allow them to come. Now, this might be contradictory to the pamphlet that's out this today, which General Service put out, I think. And I'm not trying to get in any dispute with them,
right.
but that's my recollection of what Bill Wilson said at that time. There was no controversy that I know of. And I feel, too, that we should still help them, if we can. We don't have to listen to them telling their drug stories, but we should permit them to come to the meetings and get help if we can give it to them.
To identify with the alcohol.
Yes, yeah. I do believe that. And I think this is going to happen in lots of walks of life in the years to come.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There was a saying back in, a long, long time ago that when Herbert Hoover was president of the United States, or after he left the White House, he said if everybody would apply the 12 suggested steps to their daily life in all the countries of the world, we'd never have any wars. So you can see how far-reaching this thing can go.
Right, yeah.
That's a hearsay, of course.
Right, yeah. Well, sure has been interesting talking to you. Do you have, can you think of anything else that we could put on?
Well, I think that anything that I would say about the growth of AA down here, it's been outstanding, and I've met some wonderful people down here too, and it's grown with leaps and bounds since I first came down. As you can see, there were only two groups here. And now, how many have we got here? Possibly 30?
Yeah, quite a few.
So I could see nothing but progress in the fellowship in this area. I think the AA is excellent down here, as it is everywhere as far as I'm concerned. If you apply the principles and teachings of this program, it can't help but work. I've seen it work for so many people. Somebody said we're all a series of small miracles. I suppose you've heard that.
Yeah.
I believe this is true. So I just love the fellowship. I love AA people, and I always go to meeting regardless of where I am. That's about it as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Not at all. You want this here?